We're going to go back to North Carolina. I'm in talks with the Carolina Inn, trying to get the arrangements together to get instructions for everyone to make their sleeping room arrangements. As Dr. Riley mentioned, we did get an email from Dr. Jones that he now has different availability. So I'm not sure what we're going to do with that, but I think people are already starting to book their airfares. So
can you tell me the exact dates?
Sure. The 5th is scheduled to be the clinical day. The 6th is scheduled to be the joint day. And the 7th, which is the Thursday, will be the basic science only day.
Okay.
And we're advising everyone to plan full days for all of those. So it's possible some people, because of flight times, might need to stay Thursday into Friday. So I'm arranging that with the hotel to get certain amounts of room for each. So probably, hopefully within this week, I'll be able to send out a feeler, getting to know which people need which nights.
So I might suggest holding off on your airfare if you haven't already done it until we find out whether the agenda will last the entire day or what time people can get out of there.
Are those dates set? I mean, it sounds like there might be. Are you going to consider changing them at all?
Well, we went from having only one PI available to now not having three PIs available since in the last week. So I don't think there's any time that we get a better representation. But I am trying to convince the two PIs that could possibly make it that they should try to rearrange their schedules to do so. And I think in the future we'll try to make next year's meeting at this year's meeting, you know, set it up a year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that I wanted to talk about was just the fact that RSA deadlines are going to be announced, it says, on the 15th, according to their website. So it's a good time to start thinking about maybe who wants to work together on some things, and I'm always happy to arrange conference calls to make those happen. I've got a different call-in code and everything arranged for special conference calls, so if any of you start thinking about things that you want to do together, just let me know and I can make sure that you can all talk together.
It would be nice to have an RSA symposium representing CFAS.
So RSA and ISPRO is not joined in the coming year, right?
Except no.
Right. RSA will be in San Antonio, I think in early July, late June, and ISPRO is in September in 2010 in Paris.
Right.
And people who are thinking of submitting for ISPRO, I would get their proposal in as soon as possible. Their slots are limited and a large number are coming in. I shouldn't say that. I know that a number are going in and some slots have already been allocated for special symposium. Michael, Dr. Urbanek's English is excellent, but we don't know about his presentation skills.
All right. Will we know anything or should we just take a chance?
I think we're going to have to just take a chance if you want a European, but I have some other possibilities. Again, people I don't know, but I can. When I get back to the office tomorrow, I'll send you a list of other possibilities, and
great.
Maybe you know some of them.
Sure, that would be great. And I was just going to say, we should have something for RSA, and we have the flexibility of not having to find a European, so we should just identify a theme that's not covered in the symposia that we submit to ISBRA and put something together. There's more than enough material to talk about. We could do, something spanning basic science to clinical science, capturing the whole spectrum of what CFAS does, or we could try to have something representing each of the two subdivisions of CFAS.
Michael, what have you covered in the symposium for the ISPRO so far?
So for ISPRO, I have three of four, and the fourth we're looking for will be human imaging, but it'll be myself talking about L1 and molecular identification of targets. And then Kathy Sulick is going to present some of her imaging data, and Jennifer is going to talk about interventions and choline in particular, or whatever is in at the time, since that's a whole year from now. And then the fourth was going to be, it was sort of going from molecules to animal models to treatments to human studies. So it's very broad. It's just a way of, it's a sort of a constructed theme to get a few people from CFAST up at the meeting in Paris.
That'd be great, yeah. Mm-hmm. The study group was considering maybe sending one or two symposium in there on the
to ISPRA.
Yes.
Under what themes were they thinking, Paul?
I think the one is they were trying to connecting some European group where they have done some clinic. Study. They have once a meeting probably just about a month ago in Europe. There's some Spanish group and others. Maybe there are one or two investigators out there in clinic areas. Then maybe we were put forward one for basic science. We have not yet be able to tie the theme because the people from here is easy to find, but from Europe is harder. So maybe there's one enough to put together is epigenetic areas, and maybe we can put a more broader to include more different area of speakers.
Jen, there's dead air. You got anything else on the agenda?
Yeah, but I'm just wondering if... So you're thinking of one or two addition, just one additional, and what, just wondering, Ed, in terms of ISPRA,
I would
how many
one
symposium will think?
In clinic areas.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have more than one or two fetal alcohol, but.
Right, very okay. Few people out there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, there was one other thing that was on the agenda that we didn't get on yesterday, Jill, and that is the progress report. The progress report will be due probably sometime in December. I don't think you have a date yet set, do you, Ed?
No.
Because the progress report will have to be completed before the January meeting, so you might want to start thinking about getting that together.
No, it would be the same format that we've used in the past, where we put together the PDF and we send that to everybody. You know, it's a rather lengthy document, and we do have to put it all together, and so it takes us some time. So if we're probably talking maybe the beginning of the second week in December. And you can look on the web to see all the old versions, and... look at how we format it.
We could probably send out a template too, so that just to make
right.
sure there's consistency, because otherwise we end up having to rearrange everything at the end.
Right.
I'll do that this afternoon.
Okay.
Okay. So that's all I have, other than just getting progress reports from everybody. Was there anything else that we needed to talk about?
I can just update on some clinical. Issues. They came back from South Africa. Dale Tatiana, who was supposed to bring back the CDs, Colleen never got together with her, so Colleen presumably has air freighted them here, or couriered them here, and I've asked Elizabeth Sal to let me know the minute they arrive. You know, because it was an issue of how we were going to get them here. We went through all that rigmarole about trying to find the high-speed internet thing, and
yeah.
You know, and so we thought it would be a great idea to have Tatiana just, Leah, bring them back. And
so that's MRI.
This is the MRI data,
yeah.
And Colleen never got back to Leah about it. So presumably Colleen has couriered them here now. And so we'll see if that works and how the images are. They did manage to take a reasonable number of photographs, I think over 200 and something in South Africa. And that's going on. There are some issues with the clinical project that you and I have discussed that I think we need to talk about again. But we'll have to wait till tomorrow to do that.
Yeah, and I mentioned those to Ken.
Yeah,
well,
he called me when I was in Canada, and we talked about it. But Phil left, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Phil again about it to appraise him of how serious this really is.
Yeah.
And that it's being watched by the head honcho. So, but that's something that we need to deal with and resolve pretty quickly.
Yeah.
We're also having a problem with Peter Hammond, and I know this is not directly related to the. It's of interest to Kathy. I guess Kathy, he has started to analyze some of your images.
Yes, he has.
Right.
We sent him. We're just trying to make sure we know what normal looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So he has provided us. We sent him MRIs that were all sort of standard for day 16 and day 17 black 6 fetuses, and he was able to create sort of a standard morphology for each age and then to show us how normal growth occurs in those animals.
Mm-hmm. So are you going to send him some alcohol-exposed ones now?
Our next step is to send him a few more of each age and also the intermediate age, 16 and a half. A lot of our alcohol-exposed animals are delayed by about a half a day, so we needed to know exactly what normal was at that point in time. So anyway, we're sending him 16 and a half before we send him any alcohol-exposed ones.
Okay. The issue that we're having with the human is he had identified a person who had worked on some 3D facial imaging from South Africa and was going to offer him a position. The person did not have his degree finished or wasn't finished with his current job, and so he couldn't come up last year when Peter had a subcontract in place. And so the subcontract, the year ran out without any of the money being sent and therefore went into the carryover pool. The carryover pool is 90 days after the end of the start date is when SDSU will send it in, although we've got them to move that up a little bit. And then it has to be approved by NIH and NIAAA. The problem now is that he can't hire the guy. The university won't offer the guy a position because the funds are not longer allocated, and we didn't have approval to carry over funds. So I offered to give him $25,000 in the interim, that I would guarantee that. But the university won't go seek work permit papers for someone coming into the UK unless it's for an entire year. So I don't have enough money in my budget to cover his salary for the year. So I'm going to try to talk to Tatiana or talk to Ken to see whether or not someone would guarantee at least a portion of those carryover funds so that I could guarantee Peter that this guy will be paid for the entire year so he can get a work permit to come into the UK. If that doesn't happen, then Peter has to advertise for a new position. That'll take another couple months. And then they have to train the person up. So it'll just delay everything. So, you know, I just need a way that I can. It's not that I don't think we're going to have the money, but until the carryover is approved, I can't. My university won't guarantee it. So I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And his university is unwilling to say that the person will be hired for a year unless they know they're guaranteed a year's salary. So, you know, it's kind of stupid, but that's where we are. I hope I made sense with that.
Yeah.
So, Dale, any suggestions you can come up with Ken about how to do it would be great.
Okay. I'll talk to him about it. I would think Peter, I would have thought in this time Peter would have identified other potential candidates, but maybe it's more formalized at his university, having to go through the advertising process and all that.
And this guy was the guy that we had identified after last January's meeting in North Carolina. But he didn't finish up in time, so the money just languished in this subcontract that never got initiated. Or, I mean, it was initiated, but it never got, no money was ever transferred. So it all wound up being in the carryover funds. And so they're in a state of limbo. You know, they're not automatic, so no one's willing to commit to encumbering the carryover because they're not guaranteed.
Any other business that anyone wanted to discuss before we just go through the progress?
This is Jill. Just a reminder to make sure that you're putting your publications in print, press, preparation up on the Google Doc. According to the Google Doc right now, there have been no publication updates since August, which I don't think is true. So just get them up there, and then we can do something with them. Also, if you have any updates to your contact information, we're updating that this week. So let me know if there are any changes to what's up there for you already.
Okay. All right, so I guess we'll start with Kathy since we heard a little bit of some of the things you're doing.
Okay, so we've started officially working with Peter, and I think that that's all going to end up being very good for us. I'm excited about it, and so thanks, Ed, for all the efforts that you're going to make him available to us. Are very happy that we got a challenge grant, and so that is designed to make our DTI processing faster. And so now, in addition to doing just imaging, we're working towards the long-term goal of tying the imaging to behavior. So we're initiating that work. We've gotten the news that our second publication, the Day 7 MRI work, will in fact be a 2010 date. We've submitted our gestational Day 10 exposure time and got the reviews back from that and need to do a little more work with our control group, so we're now collecting that data. We're just perking along with what we're trying to, you know, all of our overall goals. We've collected a lot of the animals for the diet study as well. Fung provided the initial group for that, and we're doing two other groups. We're hampered a little bit here by the fact that we've got a lot of construction going on, and they're doing dynamite blasts about every day at 10 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon, about 100 yards from the mouse facility, so the mice aren't particularly happy right now. And I'm hoping that won't really change our endpoints in the long run. So anyway, that's where we are.
And Jim? Is Tim still on the call?
Tim? Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. Any updates from you?
Yeah, we've completed a data set for the face, one complete set at the neonatal stage, and Charlie Goodlett has that data, and he's going to analyze it. I don't have the results from that right now, but the data set is complete. It appears that we have an alcohol effect using our TMAs with our lambs, so we're encouraged by that. We're waiting for just a couple more numbers, but it looks like when they're faced with a slightly more complicated task that there's a difference between the the control in the alcohol animals.
Slightly more complicated in comparison to what, a simpler test that you ran on them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so when we changed them from matched place to match or to matched place, they're delayed in terms of learning that. And
how many have you run so far on that task?
Let's see. I'm not sure. Tim showed me the data, and I can't remember what the number is. But it looks like it's going to hold up.
Mm-hmm.
We, by the time abstract deadline comes around, we'll certainly have at least 8 in every group.
Okay.
And so I think he has 5 in every group right now. So
okay.
That's why I say it's a little preliminary.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, I expect we'll have iBlink and Purkinje cell numbers and by the abstract deadline. We hope to have 7 abstracts in total for the SciFast.
Wow, that would be great.
Yeah.
And do you think that they would convert into publications?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think pretty much all of them. Well, one of them will not. One of them will be we'll be reporting on what we're working on right now is validating our choline procedure, our choline administration, and we'll submit an abstract on that validation. But as a standalone, that won't convert into a publication, but it'll roll into the choline study when it's completed.
Okay.
Tim, where do you stand with the ultrasound?
So the animals are bred for that, and the week after our winter meeting is when we'll do all of the analysis. So like about the 10th of January, so almost immediately after I return, we will study all of those animals.
All right, thanks.
All right, Fong?
Let me follow with Tim's sheep brain in the brainstem for the serotonin study. Tim, we have, as you know, that finally all the perfusion issues all cleared, so that the new perfusion, that they all work pretty well. So the brainstem that we collected from the sheep, actually, we are able to block them, clear up the 3 pedon codes. We're going to do not only the serotonin staining, but also we're going to weight them and then do the volume, so to see whether the brainstem has volume as well as weight difference between the treatments. In coming to for the serotonin staining, because they are pretty large, we have yet to deal with such a large piece of tissue, and in addition, I'm not that familiar with the sequence of the of this section. So we end up wanted to do is do a serial section throughout the 96 well, actually it's 24 wells. So there's a sequence being kept. So this will be very tedious staining, but probably this is a better way to be able to see all the section by section in sequence from rostral to caudal. We have quite a few sheep brains, so it would take us quite a while to get through it, but they are preserved in good conditions. So this is coming along. For the mouse study, the microvideo for the facial measurement, the anthropometry has been finished, and that has been now being has been sent to Charlie for the review. For this micro video for the surface of the face, we got into the second mesh analysis, that is the feature analysis. Now that Xiaofen, with the using these 2D video and then stack them into a stack, then do kind of the 3D kinds of measurement. So he has been showing some of the data that be able to use this method to predict alcohol-treated versus the non-alcohol-treated one. What I have him to look into is that now to using the same methods, but perhaps with some of the human phase as a way to validate the methods. So that has been yet to look into it. So hopefully that the mouse using this method as well as use can be also applied to the human. The second going on heavily is the micro-CT. We have collected quite large portfolio now that we have high-dose alcohol, we have a low-dose alcohol, then we haven't finished up the staging versus staging, namely is the short treatment versus long treatment. We have collect quite a bit of these dose differences in terms of alcohol treatment, and then look at the postnatal stage at the P7 and P21. We now have completed the P7. We are going to P21. So then we will be able to have some longitudinal information of same animal that onto two different stage. Two different age to see what the changes. At this point, the micro-CT, we have continued the anthropometry measurement, but that is not the our ultimate goal because these are actually a 3D data collected through the micro-CT. At this point, we're trying to find who will be able to analyze these 3D data in terms of feature measurement, feature analysis. We have talked to Chris Cunningham, but he's kind of, at this point, is so overwhelmed, that so we don't know yet who will be able to help us to analyze these 3D micro-CT data. That's what we have so far.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jen. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I guess in terms of our progress, we have received some data from Jan and Carl's group looking at choline levels. And one of the things that is somewhat interesting between the clinical data and the animal data is that we see an effect of gestational day. We took blood samples and tissue samples at a number of different times, and we actually see a reduction in maternal choline over time, which differs from what you see clinically, is that there tends to be an increase in maternal choline in the blood. One possibility might be that because there are multiple fetuses that they're extracting more choline. But at this point, in terms of the fetal choline levels, there aren't any differences between the ethanol and maltose, although they tend to be higher than the control group. So we're not really sure what this means, though, until we get the data from the brain and the liver, and we're still waiting to get those analyses. They're still kind of working through some troubles that they're having with extracting that from those tissues. So we're getting some data. We just don't know what it means yet. And so what we're going to be doing is we had a conference call, Tina and Carl and myself, and we're going to be looking at a couple of things. One, we're going to be looking at the manipulation of the choline diet with the choline levels and the alcohol exposure, and then also look at a time course and just see if the alcohol exposure itself causes any kind of acute effects or changes in the choline levels in the blood, which is something that we don't really have any much data on. We did collect blood both before and after the alcohol exposures each day. So we do have that data already, and we're thinking of maybe looking at a time course to see if there are any differences, to see just if the timing of when you take the blood has any kind of impact.
What's the hold up on, is it Carl's that doesn't have a high enough throughput for you?
They're just having problems with extracting from the brain and liver tissue. So once we get that, I think, because if you look at just the plasma levels, you're not really knowing what's getting into the brain. You're not really, we don't really know what that means in terms of what's getting into the tissue. So having those tissue levels, I think, is going to be very important.
Right, but how long ago did you send them brain tissues?
They've had the tissue for quite some time.
Quite some time translates into how much?
Well.
I mean, 1 month, 5 months, a year?
Oh, it's been definitely over 6 months.
All right, so they're having a problem getting the throughput. I mean, this is not, it's either a very big problem that's taking them 6 months to work out, or they're not devoting the time and attention they need to try to work it out.
Right. Well, Tina and I had a conversation with them right after RSA, or actually during the RSA meeting, to talk about our concerns of them getting these analyses completed. And, we've been told that they're putting a high priority on it and trying to get these things worked out. And since that call, we did get the blood levels. Like I said, they've had that for quite some time, too. So,
all right, so it seems that
there's still a problem in terms of getting the tissue levels. And I can't answer how much of that is them that they're prioritizing it, or if it's, just that they're having real issues methodologically.
Okay. I'm going to have to go. So I wish you all well. And Dale, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. Thank you all. I'm sorry that I got to rush here and pack up. So take
care. Bye, Ed.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, Ed.
Bye.
So I don't know if we have anything. I think we have anything else that anyone needs to discuss?
It's probably worth just a little footnote. Kathy, do you want to talk about your discovery about the C57, 6JN, and J mice?
Yeah. Actually, Debbie, my technician, brought to my attention, she had attended a animal caretakers workshop, and it had been put on by Harlan. And they handed out a little flyer talking about their mice. And one of the pluses that they were touting for the 6N strain of C57 blacks was that these mice do not have a particular mutation. It says does not, I pulled up the flyer, does not carry the capital N small n T deletion. And that NNT deletion is one that is related to oxidative stress. So, in other words, the C57 black 6J, which is the line that we've always used, versus the 6Ns, which is the one that Feng Zhao has more routinely used, the 6Js have this NNT deletion, which in fact makes them more sensitive to oxidative stress. And so that might explain a lot of the underlying fragility of the strain and sensitivity to alcohol. So anyway, it's probably a pretty important strain difference.
Anybody else have?
So this came up partly because we're going to be looking for a different metabolic effect that might differ between the two strains that would correspond to something that we've seen in our studies of what makes a cell sensitive or insensitive to ethanol's effects on L1. And this came up as a little footnote, but it's potentially important because it provides a biochemical link that distinguishes strains of mice that are sensitive or less sensitive to the teratogenic effects of ethanol, and maybe highlights again the importance of oxidative stress as an etiological factor.
Now, Kathy, you had done something earlier on differences between the six J's and the six N's.
Right.
From some a network of genes.
Right.
Were any of those related to oxidative stress? I don't remember what those were.
Yeah. In fact, they are. I went back and looked at that paper because I played a relatively minor role in that paper. It was written by a fellow named Tom Knudsen, who does all of this sort of gene networking sort of stuff. Tom was mostly interested in a benzodiazepine-like receptor that's associated with the mitochondria,
mm-hmm.
and he found a difference in that particular gene. Now, I don't know if these two genetic differences are linked in this strain of mouse or not, but that gene also, I think, makes the mice more sensitive to oxidative stress. So I think, you know, overall there's pretty, with all of the papers that support this NNT deletion, the importance of that NNT gene, and knowing that that's deleted in the 6J strain, it's really, in my mind, provides a good rationale for us seeing over the years that interfering with oxidative stress with a variety of, you know, things that seem to fix it, treating with it, catalase and SOD mimetic type of thing, can fix the problems, gives that a lot more credibility in my own mind. You know, we did the studies and they always look good to us, but knowing that this might underlie it all really reinforces that for me.
Mm-hmm. So, right. So I wonder if which becomes a better model for the human condition.
Well, I think that they're probably both good models for the human condition. You're going to find some people who are sensitive, more sensitive to alcohol than others, and there's probably a variety of reasons for that sensitivity.
Right.
And a lot of times people who are using alcohol are using other chemicals or have other conditions that may, in addition to the alcohol, make them more sensitive to oxidative stress. So
the comparison is the better model.
I think it's good to compare the strains,
Yeah.
But to not use them as interchangeable. You cannot use them as interchangeable.
Right. So okay. This seems like it's important to get out to the research community.
Well, it should be out to the research community, but these papers that talked about this deletion in the C57-6s, those papers date back to 2005 and 2006,
oh.
And I'm embarrassed to say that I wasn't aware of them until Debbie brought this to my attention just about a month ago. So, I think whoever is applying to do FAS grants needs to pay attention to which strain of mouse they're working at and know where their foundation is.
We may, you know, depending on what we find in the studies that we're about to do with Kathy, have an opportunity to highlight that if we find differences also. But if we don't, it is something that should be talked about. No.
Yeah.
I think it's an important finding,
mm-hmm.
or an observation. You know, I always ask Kathy, so why do you use this strain of mice? She says, because they get fetal alcohol. You know, it's easy to treat them and get a reasonable return on the number of abnormal mice. So here's a potential explanation. And, the sort of definitive experiment is to rescue the animal. And see if that makes it resistant.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That would be a harder experiment to do, but that's the experiment that I think begs to be done.
Yeah, you could do an NNT transgenic.
Correct.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
It would be real cool if you could turn your 6J into a 6N phenotype.
Yeah.
And that's how we got to this, is because we found a way biochemically to turn our insensitive cells into sensitive cells after 13 years, and we'll see if those differences prevail in the two strains of mice. But the idea that you can, with a genetic change, turn on or turn off oxidative protection against oxidative stress and have this big a difference in the phenotype is certainly very interesting, and it also provides a clue about something to look for in offspring of mothers whose prevalence of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder differs for genetic reasons. It just gives you a nice candidate gene.
Yeah,
I wonder if the information on the strain differences could be put on the FASD web site.
Actually, that's a very cool idea, Jennifer. I think that just this little page that Harlan put out to advertise their mice with the information about that they don't carry this NNT deletion and the three references that they provide to that effect might be an easy way to do it, to bring it to people's attention.
That would be useful. I was just looking on the Harlan site, and it's not easy to find that report that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, this might affect other alcohol researchers beyond the FASD research, and maybe an RSA little blurb in an email could help others.
You know, it'd be great to have an abstract. If we could get something before the end of the year that we could send in, because it's always better to publish stuff than to send notices out, because the notices get lost over time.
Yeah.
And obviously the references are there and they've been published, but no one has made the link.
Yeah.
It might be worth, a note, a one-pager in the Blue Journal.
Yeah.
Just making the the connection and saying, this could have significant implications for some of the research that's done with alcohol and this strain of mice. And I think a number of people have looked at oxidative stress as an initiating factor in a number of signaling pathways as well. TOL4 is one where oxidative stress has been implicated as an initiating event. So the implications are broader than fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. It might be worth just writing a three-paragraph note, a single-page thing to the Blue Journal, if it looks like we won't be able to get something from the work that we're about to do.
Well, okay, I have two points to make. One is that the 6N mice do get defects from alcohol. It's just harder to make them.
Oh, sure.
Okay, and so you don't want to imply that the 6Ns are totally resistant. They're not. And two, the work that we did initially with Fung when we were trying to decide how to deal with these two strains, we looked to see if the embryos develop at the same rate, and in fact they don't. The 6Js, the ones that are more prone to oxidative stress, develop much more slowly. They're about 6 hours behind. So when you time your alcohol exposures to look at these mice, you have to time them differently.
Yep.
So, and Scott presented that with Fung as a co-author for the RSA this past year. And he's getting ready to write it up as a paper.
So that
isn't going to be a really big, gee-wow paper. It's more of just the observation that they're different. And so perhaps I'm sure that Scott's going to mention this difference in that paper, but we won't have any more experimental evidence.
But that sounds like a perfect place to put this, if you've already got one cooking on the differences between these two. And I wouldn't. I think the point is this may be a susceptibility gene, the idea that there's multiple hits, and this is something that predisposes an animal to something else that causes oxidative injury.
Right.
Not an unusual idea.
But I think so. We can get a little bit out in the published literature that way with the consortium, you know, support behind it. But to get it to the immediate, not everybody's going to read that paper or realize the significance of the, you know, one paragraph in there about this. So having another avenue of getting it to everybody's attention may be important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you want to write a letter? A letter to the editor?
A letter to, you know, I think it's still better to have something. I don't want to preempt anything that Scott might want to put there, but I think it belongs in his paper so that he has priority, or your group does, on the observation. It might be helpful to highlight it in a separate just letter.
Yeah.
And, you know, to send something out to RSA membership afterwards so you don't preempt your letter.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's cautionary information, but it might also be a useful comparison for some people doing other types of studies.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just a nice opportunity to talk about multiple hit hypotheses and susceptibility genes for environmental exposures and all the rest. It could be done in just a couple paragraphs, and it gets out that way with the focus there and maybe not just something that would be lost in the discussion of a paper.
So I guess then the thing to do is to put a little burr under Scott's saddle and see how quickly he can get his paper submitted. And maybe once that paper is submitted, we could write a letter as the consortium.
Yeah.
And I can initiate writing that letter, and maybe, Michael, you can help me with some edits on it or additions
sure.
to it.
That sounds great.
Okay. All right.
Good. All right. Any other business?
Well, I look forward to everybody being here again in January.
Well, we look forward to going there again.
Good. Good. So last time Fulton helped us out, and he said he would again, so we'll see if we can organize some common social events, or at least one. So if there's anything in particular that anyone is interested in doing here in Chapel Hill in January, please let me know.
Okay. All right. Well,
how about a basketball game?
Well, I haven't checked the basketball schedule. We're midweek here, so
okay.
I don't know. I'll check
it. I did check the schedule, and they are out of town that week.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that leaves ice fishing.
No, not in Chapel Hill.
There we have Duke basketball.
Duke basketball.
Yeah.
We don't even talk about that unless it's Duke versus Carolina.
Right up the road?
Yeah, it is. I can check.
That's blasphemous.
I think it's pretty hard to get Duke tickets. But
yeah, it is.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.